from KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. In his 2005 book, Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder, author Richard Louv made the case that America's kids were plagued by too much time indoors and not enough out, and that that nature deficit was exacting a significant toll on America's young. In the hour ahead, we're going to talk about a movement now sometimes called No Child Left Inside, an effort to wean kids from video games and get them outdoors again. No Child Left Inside, why it matters and what can be done to make it happen, next on Forum, after this. From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. The startling rise in childhood obesity has received plenty of attention. Rates have tripled since the 1980s. And the relative inactivity of today's kids has been frequently noted as well. According to a Kaiser Family Foundation study, the average 8 to 10-year-old spends 6 hours a day watching television, playing video games, or sitting at the computer. So how about heading outdoors to enjoy nature? Well, it doesn't seem like a likely alternative to most children. According to two researchers at the University of Chicago and Bryn Mawr College, the average amount of time spent by young children outdoors in unstructured activity is 4 minutes a day. And the numbers are similar for some other forms of outdoor activities. Bike riding, that's actually down. In fact, bike sales are down. So too are the number of kids who swim or canoe. It's these sorts of statistics that worry Richard Louv, the author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. It's not just the lack of activity that concerns Louv and others. It's what kids are missing by not spending time outdoors, by not learning what can be gleaned from a direct connection to nature. But now a number of groups are pushing back with a movement that sometimes become called No Child Left Inside. The Sierra Club, the Conservation Fund, outdoor companies like REI, the U.S. Forest Service, and a number of initiatives at the state level are all pushing to get kids outdoors again. So we're going to spend the hour today talking about that movement and what gets lost when kids think the only mouse is one that's connected to a computer. Joining us now, Richard Louv, author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. He's also a longtime columnist for the San Diego Union-Tribune and chairs the Children and Nature Network. He joins us this morning from San Diego. Richard Louv, good morning.
Good morning.
Here, too, is Martin LeBlanc. He is the National Student Education Director of the Sierra Club. Martin, good morning.
Good morning.
And Juan Martinez joins us as well. He's the volunteer youth coordinator also for the Sierra Club. Juan Martinez, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Happy to have all of you here. Let's begin by talking about what the problem is, and then we'll talk some more about the efforts that all of you are engaged in to rectify that. Richard Louv, you sometimes quote a fifth grader in your writings who said to you once, "I like to play indoors better because that's where all the electrical outlets are." Describe to us the sort of attitudes that you came across as you were interviewing kids for this book and your previous works as well, and why that gives you some concern.
Well, the attitudes of the kids were interesting, obviously. I mean, that quote fairly well sums up what many, many children feel. But there's a different side to that quote, which is I started noticing when I was interviewing kids for another book in the late 1980s, early 1990s, that they would watch television and they would see programs like Lassie, these old programs where kids actually went outside and built tree houses. And they felt that what they were watching was something that might be on Mars. It seemed alien to them. And they were curious about it. My own son at that time, who was a little boy then, now he's in college, was sitting across the table from me one night at dinner and said, "Dad, how come it was more fun when you were a kid?" I said, "What are you talking about? You have lots of fun. Look at all the great things you get to do." And he said, "Yeah, but you got to build tree houses. You got to build forts. You got to go outside." And I said, "You go outside." And I realized that he wasn't going outside anywhere near as much as I was. And so kids actually were pretty aware of this in curious ways.
And we'll come back to some of the reasons why that's taking place and what phenomenon are sort of pushing kids indoors rather than out. But let's also get the stories of our other guests, both Martin LeBlanc, the National Student Education Director at the Sierra Club, and Juan Martinez, Youth Coordinator for the Sierra Club. And I'd like you both to speak to this from your own personal perspective, because as younger individuals, you had some of the experience that Richard Louv is describing. Juan Martinez, started out as a kid growing up in Los Angeles. Tell me about what your attitudes were about going outside and being involved in nature, and what experience of yours changed that?
Well, growing up in L.A. was always a weird, it's a weird clash of just cultures and actualities of life, of living in the city, you know, living in the risk and having to deal with day to life. And, you know, getting outside not becoming one of my priorities growing up, because I didn't know that, you know, I had that connection. So it was that not having that gap between nature and myself growing up, that I didn't realize how crucial it was for me to be a part of it. And so growing up in the city of LA, it wasn't always about, you know, getting to the park or riding my bike. It was something that you just kind of did, and the culture in LA didn't go with that. It wasn't something that you did or something that you did with your friends. It was more, you know, nobody ever said, let's go take a hike or let's go to the beach.
And what changed that for you? Describe the experience that you found that really changed your own relationship to nature. And in some ways, I think also you would say changed your life.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. When I was 15 and I got to experience through the Dorsey Eco Club and Glenda Pepin, got to go to the Tetons Science School in the Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming. And, you know, that was the first time I ever saw stars in itself. I was, you know, regardless of, you know, so the impact of having these exposures of never actually seen stars, and, you know, realizing that, why hadn't I ever seen stars, and what was it about nature and the world that I was living in that was so different, and becoming more aware of you know, my potentials as a person, that this just wasn't a show on TV, this wasn't PBS, this wasn't nature, this was actual life. I was actually seeing it, I was actually studying this, you know, the scat of a bison, and, you know, all these different actualities that became reality to me opened up a whole new world that wasn't just possible in the sense of nature, but it was possible for me to accomplish my goals in life and become more active in pursuing, you know, an educational career, a professional career.
Juan Martinez, volunteer youth coordinator for the Sierra Club. And Juan, when you came back to L.A. and started talking to people about the stars and all the things that were out there in nature, did they look at you like you were nuts, or what was that experience like?
I mean, a lot of them, especially I think a lot of the older people understood where I was coming from, because I think a lot of them knew about these things. But when I spoke to my peers, when I spoke to my other friends, they were like, wow, that's cool, I wish I could see that. And so, you know, creating a friendship bond and getting people together to actually go outside was, you know, my next goal. It wasn't just for me to experience, but actually to share with other people. And that's one of the reasons why I'm still very active in this movement.
Juan Martinez joins us this morning. He's the volunteer youth coordinator for the Sierra Club, along with Richard Louv, author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder, and Martin LeBlanc, who is the National Student Education Director, also for the Sierra Club. Martin, your story, because I know you went through something not dissimilar from what Juan Martinez did as well.
Yeah, my situation was a little bit different than Juan's, in the sense that when I was young, around the age of 5 to 10, I did experience the outdoors a lot. My parents took me out on trips. I grew up in Seattle to Olympic National Park. They still have a picture of me in my little yellow raincoat looking up at a huge Douglas fir tree. So I was exposed to nature early on, so it was a reality to me. But the reality of being an adolescent, and I moved around a lot between the ages of 12 and 16, took me away from that. And as a wise man, my father once said, at 16, I was a self-indulgent pig, and really had a choice, either military school School or an Outward Bound Adventure course.
And you chose?
I chose Outward Bound Adventure course, thinking it would be an easy weekend and I could probably sneak my drinks in and have a good time. And what it did for me is it humbled me. Going out to Hurricane Island in Maine with 60-mile-per-hour winds whipping around me, and all of a sudden the orienteering skills that I had not really listened to the day before, the way Outward Bound works, they teach you orienteering skills for a couple of days and then drop you off and you're supposed to find yourself your way back to camp. All of a sudden I realized the world didn't revolve around Martin LeBlanc. And that, at that point in my life, was something I needed. And it did humble me, and I did find my way back to camp. And it did set me on a course where I realized that I had to be more responsible for my own actions. And so it just was an opportunity for me to see that the world was a big place and that I didn't control it and that I had to, you know, work hard and be responsible in order to and make good decisions. And, you know, that was my experience. And also after college, I actually taught outdoor education. That was my first kind of professional foray into the field. And I saw similar kids, you know, who had ADD and, you know, were on Ritalin and were, you know, the troublemakers of the class. But you would get them outside, give them a leadership role, and being able to move the energy and to take in that energy, all of a sudden those kids were not the troublemakers in the class. They were the leaders of the class. So I've seen it on a bunch of different levels.
Martin LeBlanc and Juan Martinez both working on various youth programs today with the Sierra Club. And Richard Louv, when you listen to both Martin and Juan, I wonder if you'd take that now in another step. You heard Martin describe the way in which one of the lessons he learned from getting outdoors was one of humility, that he, in fact, was not the center of the world. And there were other things that he could glean from that experience of being outdoors on an island in Maine. What else are kids missing when they play indoors and don't play out?
Well, first, I know both Martin and Juan, and they're great guys, and I can testify that Martin actually is no longer self-indulgent, as his father put it. He's a great guy and very, very passionate about that and about this issue and the real deal. He's also the vice president of the Children and Nature Network, which I chair. I think that what we've seen really in the last decade, finally, is that the people who study child development are beginning to look at how nature itself, the natural environment, affects healthy child development. What they're finding is that a good case can be made that it's perhaps essential for healthy child development. You mentioned the University of Chicago. At the University of Chicago, an ongoing series of studies of kids with attention deficit disorder show that even as young as 5 years old, kids who get just a little bit of contact with nature, hands-on contact, their symptoms of ADD get much better. Other studies of creativity show that kids that play in natural areas versus the flat, boring concrete or turf play areas, the kids in the natural play areas play more creatively. They are much more likely to invent their own games. The leaders that emerge there tend to be the smartest instead of the physically strongest. They play more cooperatively. Something seems to happen to the human organism when it's outside that doesn't happen when it's inside. That's not to say that sitting in front of a computer is bad or that even playing video games is bad. My kids certainly did both of those, and they can testify that they got me to play Grand Theft Auto and remind me at every time they can that I try to run over everybody on the screen, including the good people. So I can speak with moral authority on that. Video games, it's too easy to blame this just on video games. It's really a whole matrix of reasons that involve our educational institutions, how we build and operate our communities, our neighborhoods. Just in many, many ways, the cards are stacked against kids going outside and just doing what generations, thousands of years of what human beings did. And we're seeing such a change so quickly that you can't underestimate the importance of that to human psychology, to human health, to human physical health, and indeed to the human spirit.
Richard Louv, author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. One of those things that appears to be a force for keeping kids indoors rather than out, Richard Louv, is it's the oldest parental emotion of them all, and that's anxiety. That's concern about one's child's safety. How do you factor that in and the understandable concern that many parents have about it being a dangerous world out there?
Sure. When I interviewed parents once they got done talking about video games and their lack of time because they were working such long hours, et cetera, the main thing that they would talk about, and they would talk about this with the greatest passion, is their level of fear. They were terrified. I have to, you know, qualify this statement in saying, as a parent, I felt that fear too, even though I knew better. I had reported on the statistics, the actual number of stranger kidnappings, which is what parents fear the most, has actually either stayed stable or gone down over the last 20 years, depending on which study you look at. The actual number really isn't that large. You know, one is too many, but should 100 a year of the classic kidnappings by strangers really change the culture the way it seems to be? I actually blame my own profession of journalism, particularly television journalism. I like to think us print guys are better, but in actuality, it's us too, that all you have to do is watch CNN or Fox, and you'll see how they take a handful of terrible crimes against children and repeat them over and over and over again, the same handful. And when they're got a slow news day, then they talk about JonBenet. And parents, logically, are very, very afraid, despite the fact that almost all stranger kidnappings are almost all kidnappings are done by somebody the family knows or a family member.
So part of the effort, and we're going to bring in a state senator now who's interested in trying to promote some of the programs that all three of our guests this morning are interested in promoting. Part of what you're also saying, Richard Louv, it seems to me, is that outdoor education has to not just involve kids, but also involve parents to make them more interested in providing this.
Right, and I think there's two essential things that have to happen. I'm not pretending, and neither is Juan or Martin or anybody else associated with this movement, that we're going to head back to the 1950s anytime soon. That fear is going to stay, even though it is based in part on emotion and media rather than the reality. That fear is not going to go away. So two things are going to have to happen. Parents, grandparents, other positive adults are going to have to take kids into nature themselves. It's going to have to be intentional. The second thing that is going to have to happen is that the organizations and the institutions that help kids and parents do that are going to need more of our moral and financial support. That's everything from the programs that the Sierra Club has to scouting programs to nature centers, schools with outdoor classrooms, and so on. It's not going to happen by accident.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that could be done and are being done now to try to encourage this idea of no child left inside. And joining us now is Democratic State Senator Alex Padilla. He represents the 20th Senate District in the San Fernando Valley. And he's working on legislation to help fund outdoor education. Senator Padilla, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
What are you trying to accomplish? What is the legislation that you would like to see passed by the state legislature?
Well, it is known as SB 207, the Outdoor Environmental Education and Recreation Program. We're basically trying to institutionalize and formalize a commitment to outdoor education and exposure for kids to the outdoors through an official state program. You know, we're not starting from scratch. Obviously, you heard from Richard and all his research and reasons why this makes sense. A few years ago, one of my colleagues, Senator Joe Simitian, authored a bill that launched a program on a pilot basis. There were some skeptics then. There were some cynics then. There was some doubt then about, you know, does this really make a difference when you take kids to the outdoors? You know, what really happens other than a glorified field trip? Well, we weren't surprised at the results of that study. We took kids out, and lo and behold, math scores went up, science scores went up. And it wasn't just about academics. Part of the findings from that pilot program included things like improved self-confidence and self-esteem in the students who participated, better conflict resolution and mediation skills that developed. It's amazing what happens when people, you know, get back into their natural environment and surroundings. And so we have a report that's documented this at the state level. And so why not make it a permanent program?
And Senator Padilla, I'm curious about how you, because a state senator does nothing except juggle, and that's juggling various priorities. And you're dealing with whether or not it's the governor's request to increase the budget for prisons, or in our first hour this morning, we were talking about public health concerns as it relates to tuberculosis and that story this week. How do you put a focus and a priority on this? Because I'm sure many of your colleagues would say, and I'd like to hear our other guests respond to this too, that sounds great, Senator Padilla, but it's not as important as X, Y, Z, B, or Q. Senator Padilla?
Part of my challenge is to make the argument, and the argument's an easy one to make. This is a win-win-win. It's not only good for kids learning, as we talked about a minute ago. It's good for their health. We know that part of the healthcare crisis in America is really a health crisis in America. If society was healthier, there wouldn't be the demands on the healthcare system that there is. And so by getting kids to the outdoors and reminding them what it's like to be physically active as opposed to, you know, the Xbox and the PlayStation 2 and sitting on a couch, it has those ancillary benefits. And I also think it's not lost on many of my colleagues. You know, as much as we're patting ourselves on the back for having approved legislation last year to aggressively reduce greenhouse gases, we need to begin to train the next generation of leaders, the next generation of Californians to continue that progress and that movement. We can't wait 20 years to clue our children onto greenhouse gas reductions and global warming. We need to start today, and it starts by exposing them to the outdoors, as I was fortunate enough to be exposed when I was a kid, but a lot of my friends weren't.
Senator, State Senator Alex Padilla, he represents the 20th Senate District in the San Fernando Valley, now pushing Senate Bill 207, which would provide support for outdoor education in California. Senator Padilla, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Juan Martinez and Martin LeBlanc, I'm curious if you would sound in. We have to take a break in just a moment, but your feelings about why this ought to be a priority. Juan, start us out on that, because there are so many things that are deserving of support within the city of Los Angeles. There are so many competing needs. Why make outdoors a priority?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, see that argument, and I see it every day. I'm actually a community organizer for ACORN, and, you know, I deal with dealing with affordable housing, illegal evictions, you know, trying to get people better health services. And, you know, then comes, you know, getting kids into the outdoors. And that's always been a passion of myself, because I realize that, you know, that exposure and that link to the outdoors and that, you know, that whole experience about being able to see the world as a whole creates something within within youth, within everybody. And it creates, I think, a responsibility. And that responsibility goes, you know, from every single aspect of taking care of yourself and your body, being able to, you know, realize that you need to exercise, because if you don't, you're going to hydrate when you're on a hike or, you know, even walking down the street. I remember going on a course and, you know, at the end of the course running 10 miles, that's the most that I've ever ran in my life, you know, prior to that.
So all these things, in a sense, are interconnected. It's not like you're segregating out outdoor education from all the other concerns. It sounds like you work on one, that all of these things are connected.
Exactly. I mean, one of the best examples that we use is, you know, asthma. When you talk about asthma and environmental justice and the concerns that, you know, people have when they're going to the health, to the clinics, why are kids getting asthma? Because it's our carbon emissions that are causing sometimes, you know, these hazardous environments that don't allow children to be able to play.
But, we'll have to hold it there, and we'll come back in just a minute and talk more about the value of being outdoors and the interesting effort that is going on now all around the country, sometimes referred as No Child Left Inside. We'll talk more with author Richard Louv, his book Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder, and Martin LeBlanc and Juan Martinez of the Sierra Club when we return. And we'd love to have you participate in our discussion as well. You can do so now by calling us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. If you have thoughts or concerns about getting kids outdoors, call us now, or you can email us as well at forum@kqed.org. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, getting kids outdoors and the sort of efforts that are now underway to do just that, sometimes referred to as No Child Left Inside. Our guests include Richard Louv, who's the author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. Martin LeBlanc, National Student Education Director for the Sierra Club, and Juan Martinez, who's a volunteer youth coordinator for that effort in Los Angeles for the Sierra Club as well. Earlier, we were joined by State Senator Alex Padilla. And we welcome your participation in our hour discussion this morning. You can join us now at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Mark emails in this interesting observation. I've been involved in outdoor and experiential education programming for 17 years and seen properly designed programming change lives. My concern with the recent attention that focus and the focus that people are giving to children being left indoors is the lack of scrutiny to the outdoor programs that are referenced as a solution. It's not good enough to just get a kid outside for that experience to be meaningful. So Mark Martin LeBlanc is saying you can't just get kids outdoors. There has to be more to it than that. Describe some of your efforts that are underway right now and the way in which they're designed that might make a real difference.
Well, first of all, I want to compliment State Senator Alex Padilla. We like to refer to SB 207 as the Leave No Child Inside Act, and it's a great first step. I think the first thing that the Sierra Club sees is we feel that, you know, every child deserves and needs a special place in the outdoors. But I think when you start trying to decide what is the best outdoor experience for a child, you're taking away a serious component that is we're hoping to empower local communities to decide what's the best outdoor experience for them. I think Juan's experience in Los Angeles is going to differ from someone in Tulare County in rural California. And I really think, you know, the power that we're trying to do with the Leave No Child Inside Act and other initiatives is really give local communities the necessary means in order to get kids outside. And I think a lot of our efforts go along with a bunch of things that are going on in the state. I mean, Governor Schwarzenegger has put a real emphasis on trying to engage kids in healthy lifestyles. And, you know, the co-sponsors of the Leave No Child Inside Act is the American Diabetes Association. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see this correlation, and, you know, we're working with the Sheriff of Orange County, Republican Mike Corona, who sees getting kids outdoors in his county as a great diversion from kids being involved in gang activity. So there's a lot of different ways that this fits in, and I think one of the things that I'm concerned about, and I really speak to Richard Louvre on this, because what Rich has really done that is so special with Last Child in the Woods is he is now galvanized this movement. He's brought, you know, the Sierra Club developers all together discussing ways in which we can work together to solve this, because really only you can only solve this in a community development approach. But what concerns me is here we are in a state in California, which in my estimation has the most beautiful natural resources in the country. We have a network of outdoor schools. We have the most diverse population in the country. And while other states are instituting these things and there's, you know, the gang stuff going on, there's all these health initiatives, the one thing that's missing right now is a way to give programs that are trying to get kids outdoors the sustainability that they need in order to survive. And so we're really hoping, and we're working with the governor, that he can see this as a way not just to get kids outdoors, but really start to address these community problems. And we're really hoping to work with him and get something done, because I really feel that California could be a leader in the Leave No Child Inside movement. But right now I'm a bit concerned that other states are moving more forward.
Well, let's hear from one community specifically here in California, and that's Concord. The mayor of Concord, Mayor Mark Peterson, has called in and wants to put in his two cents on what his community in particular is trying to accomplish. Mayor Peterson, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I was very excited to hear about Richard's book, and I actually was preparing for a breakfast for our Chamber of Commerce, and I was bringing some new initiatives to the table. And I was very troubled by the fact that it costs so much money financially for businesses on obesity issues. And I heard about the initiative No Child Left Inside. So what I've done is we have four activities that we're planning for our children of our community, four activities the mayor leads throughout the year to try and get kids outside. We just had a two-mile hike. We're planning a swim day. We've got a bike ride coming up. And we've got a sports day. So that's something that myself as mayor can challenge our city, which is 130,000 people, to try and get their kids outside more to really deal with this obesity problem.
Mayor, thanks. Thanks for calling in and letting us know what's going on in Concord. Richard Louvre, talk more about the way in which you're trying to engage leadership on this issue, but also people in the business community as well. Mayor Peterson was just talking about how obesity costs businesses in his city a lot of money. How are you trying to make this an alliance of all kinds of people from all kinds of perspectives?
Well, first, let me say something about the caller, about the outdoor education folks who have been out there for a long time. As he said, he was out there for 17 years. He's been, your caller has been working on this for a long time, long before this book came along. There are a lot of people out there like that. What we really need to do is build a constituency, a political constituency that's much bigger for the people who have that kind of expertise. But even beyond that, beyond the classroom, beyond the programs, we need to look at the very fabric of our society. Next month, Clint Eastwood is bringing together about 20, 25 of the largest California residential developers in the whole state in Carmel to have me talk to them and try to work on ways that developers can build developments in the future that actually connect kids to nature. I've been astonished at the amount of interest that developers have shown. I hope that interest isn't used as an excuse for more suburban sprawl, but rather that we turn that to the second and third rung suburban rings, and as they need to be redeveloped, redevelop them in a green way that actually gets kids out and human beings out into nature. It gets us more exposed to nature, and that's possible.
Give us an example of that, if you would, Richard Louv, about the way in which design actually could play a role in encouraging kids to go outdoors rather than stay inside.
Well, sure. Not far from San Francisco and Davis, there's a community called Village Homes that was built two decades ago that is just a marvelous place where there are outside areas, the cars are hidden. There's a, you know, instead of a wall around the community, they have a pecan orchard, and the kids pick the pecans and sell them at a farmer's market. It's not a counterculture community. It's really very much in demand in terms of people wanting to move in there. But there, in Western Europe, there are a lot of kind of eco-towns that are developing that actually have streams of recycled rainwater running through them and habitat on the roofs, green roofs that last 100 years instead of the typical 20 years that our roofs last. What's really interesting about this type of urban design and urban and architecture is that what they're finding is that this kind of approach, the people that work in these buildings, for instance, when this is applied to the workplace, are more productive. Sick leave goes down. When schools are designed this way, kids' grades go up. Their test taking gets better.
And so I just wanted to pick up on that because this takes us back to the question I posed to Senator Padilla, which is how you make the argument for this as a priority. We live in a society where there are so many competing needs, and California, as you know, has so many different budgetary demands placed upon it. Is that the essential argument to make then, that this isn't just about looking at the stars, as important as that may be? This is something that will pay out literally in all kinds of other beneficial ways.
Absolutely. You put it very well. And I was speaking in Florida recently, and there was the lieutenant governor introduced me. And before I went up, we were talking, and she said, "Rich, do you think things will ever be as good as they used to be?" And when I spoke, I said, "You know, the lieutenant governor has asked an interesting question, but it's the wrong question. The real question is, how can we make things better than they ever were?" It is possible to make life better through design of our communities and through a reestablishment of our connection to nature. And again, this isn't kind of new age stuff. This is real practical. Yeah. And just even if you just look at the issue of child obesity.
Lots of people want to join in our conversation, so let's work our way through more of our calls this morning. Joining us first from Los Altos, Ihan, if that's the right pronunciation, go ahead.
Yes, it is Ihan. Hi, thank you for taking my call. My daughter, who is 6 and in kindergarten at Key School in Palo Alto, it's an independent school. Every year, the children take an outdoor education trip, and being not an outdoorsy person myself, I was a little nervous and apprehensive about it, but we did an overnight in Costa Nova. The entire class goes, and it was absolutely wonderful, and I feel that, you know, beyond just curiosity and learning about nature, it was inspiring and empowering for the children. So I'm now really looking forward to the coming grades, and they go all the way up until eighth grade, and then they go camping by themselves without any parents, just faculty and the students. And I applaud the school, and I'm really excited about what my daughter's going to learn.
Great. Ian, thanks. Thanks for the call and for the testimonial to what your schools are doing. Juan Martinez, though, Ian's point also brings up another question, which is that I don't know this, but I'm guessing that those sorts of outdoor expeditions and camping trips that Ian is describing about the schools in Palo Alto and suburban San Francisco may not be as readily available in South Central LA. What about that? What about the needs that are particularly in the inner city area to give kids that sort of experience?
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely one of the things that I realized when I came back from Wyoming was that I couldn't always go back to Wyoming to, you know, get that nature experience that I needed. But I started realizing that, you know, there's Kenneth Hahn State Park, which is one of the largest urban parks in the metropolitan areas around in the country, right down the street from me. I didn't even know that. And the Santa Monica Mountains aren't even an hour away from me. And then the San Gabriels aren't even 2 hours away from me. And, you know, just having grown up and not even knowing these things, not even having that exposure, nobody, you know, I think a part of it was, you know, not having that exposure and that ability to even, you know, to utilize these resources that were available to us. So it's not, I don't think it's so much of a question of are the opportunities available. It's about taking advantage of them.
And Martin LeBlanc, how are you trying to encourage that, particularly for kids in the inner city, to give them the sort of opportunities that Juan Martinez had and would like to see more of his fellow young people in inner city Los Angeles attain?
Well, I think the first thing that we're trying to do is we're trying to go to communities and listen to her again, to hear how communities want to help connect their kids with the outdoors. And I think an example of that is in Los Angeles, and I'm sorry for Juan because it's his rival high school, but he always mentions that they beat them in football. At Crenshaw High School in Los Angeles, the last traditional African-American high school, which is beset with gang problems, for 5 years, the Sierra Club has been a sponsor of the Crenshaw High School Eco Club. Through that Eco Club is now the largest after-school organization at Crenshaw High School. And I had a moment last week where I was there, and the class president, who's going to UCLA, along with his football patches on his Letterman's jacket, also had an Eco Club patch. And what we've seen is not only is it giving these kids, and this kind of goes to a bigger point I want to make, not only is it giving these kids an opportunity to do something after school that keeps them busy, that engages them, that builds this personal responsibility and self-esteem that these studies that the Sierra Club helped sponsor in 2003 have shown come from outdoor experiences, but there's now five members from that Eco Club after this five-year commitment who are at four-year colleges majoring in environmental studies and going on to be professionals. And this is so much more than just going out and looking at the stars, because truly what we're trying to do is, if you look at Newsweek and all the magazines now that are promoting the environment as cool, and you know, if you see the effect that global, you know, the new conservative prime minister of France saying global warming is his number one priority, and everyone here saying that. But if we truly want to engage young people and have them care and work towards solving this issue, it's not just showing them an Armageddon scenario, and Rich does a great job of this. It's producing a challenge and giving them the necessary skills to rise up and face the challenge of global warming. And the only way we can really do that is by getting them outside and supporting these local programs. And I think our concern is that right now you see a program start out, go for a year in inner city Los Angeles, go for a year in Oakland, and then not able to get the funding to continue and become sustainable. And only by having that sustainability and a state funding system or private funding systems with state systems can we truly reach all these kids and have a new generation that can rise up and face these environmental challenges.
Let's take another caller. Nicole has been waiting patiently in Oakland this morning. Nicole, go ahead.
I've been a walker and outdoor lover for all my life, and I'm 58. And I think the emphasis for kids is happiness in the outdoors. I think because you're not going to have them do anything that they don't feel happy about. And I think being outdoors for me is happiness, is pure happiness. Moving in the air, moving in light, you know, seeing all the beauties of nature. And another thing is about fear. I feel totally alien to this fear environment. People don't think they don't fear the death of their kids when they put them in a car, and there are more kids, you know, probably killed in a car than outdoors.
Yeah.
And the media has changed our perspective of life and our values. And another thing is, if adults don't enjoy the outdoors, what would the kids do?
Yeah.
And if the adults don't go to nature, if they don't walk in nature, what would the kids do?
Nicole, thank you. Yeah, well put, and I appreciate your contributions very much along the lines, I think, of what Richard Louv and others are saying this morning. Let's go right to another caller. Roger in Oakland as well joins us next. Roger, you're on.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my call. Richard, thanks so much for bringing out your book, and Martin and Juan for all the work that you do at the Sierra Club. Another group that hasn't been mentioned that's actually a part of the Sierra Club is Sierra Club's Inner City Outings Group, which helps to get urban youth out in the backcountry. And I work for a somewhat parallel organization called Bay Area Wilderness Training that provides resources to teachers and other youth workers on how to get their youth out on backcountry trips, backpacking and camping. We provide training and then also access to outdoor gear and then now also access to transportation resources.
And Roger, if someone listening would like to get in touch with your organization and take advantage of the programs that you're offering, how would they do that?
Our website is available, www.bawt.org. That's Bay Area Wilderness Training.
BAWT.org.
Yeah, that's right. And so I just, there's been a lot of conversation about getting youth out. But for urban youth who live in neighborhoods where there aren't local options, like in village homes and other areas where they can actually get out in their communities, as Richard is very wonderfully trying to do, field trip-based models or backcountry models or some option to actually get out of the city for an extended period of time so that they can actually play in nature is a really important component to having an outdoor experience and a connection to nature. And those help to bring in a lot of the benefits
right.
that Richard cites in his book.
Roger, thanks. Thanks for calling. And again, the organization, if you're interested in learning more about that in Oakland, is bawt.org. Here's an email from Eric who writes, I believe part of the problem lies with parents, sort of what Nicole was saying earlier. I don't think kids will find out that there are outdoor opportunities for them unless they have the guidance of their parents. I'm not saying we should ban video games and TV, but parents should limit kids' exposure to inside forms of entertainment. Richard Louv, where do you come down on that? You were confessing earlier your own familiarity with video games when your kids were younger. What do you think the right approach is for in dealing with that issue as a parent?
Well, first, I think probably the wrong approach is the knee-jerk reaction to blame parents for everything. Parents are up against a lot these days. And yes, they need to be more responsible for this, but they face many challenges. I think the correct approach, at least the effective approach, will be to point out to parents that this isn't the problem. This is the solution. This shouldn't be viewed as one more thing to put on the list of great chores that you got to get done. We're already overloaded. In actuality, when a parent or any positive adult takes a child into nature, they receive all the same benefits of that experience that the kid does immediately, including the enormous stress reduction, which is documented.
And it's not that expensive.
And it's not that expensive, and including longer attention span and higher degree of creativity and a sense of wonder. So this is this is not a bitter pill. This is actually, in a way, the solution for much of the stress that we feel as parents when we take our children into nature.
It's a great way to put it. But on the question of limiting, are you an advocate of putting limits on how much time kids should spend in front of their computer?
Sure. But that's only half of the equation. Too often parents are preached to and told they've got to, you know, turn off the TV. But we don't talk to them very much about what to do after the TV goes off. And we don't provide parents with the opportunity often to take their kids into nature. We have to remember there's a whole generation of young parents coming up that many of them did not have the kind of experience in nature that those of us who are older were privileged to have. And so even when they know the enormous health benefits of nature for their kids, and want to get that for the kids, they don't know where to start. That's why it's so important to begin to focus on programs like Senator Padilla is supporting to get kids to outdoors and to help parents do that. That's what's so important. We need to put almost as much, maybe just as much importance on parents as we do on the kids in this.
And Diane in San Jose wants to take up that same topic. Diane, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I work with a program called Hooked on Nature, and one of the things that we do is actually work with educating parents. And what I do is do workshops for parents talking about the very simple things that you can do with children. Planting a seed is a wonderful activity to do with children. They enjoy it, they love it, and it also is teaching a lot of what I call pre-kindergarten, pre-literacy skills. And then just allowing children to go outside in the rain, go outside at night together and take moonlight walks. And I hope the parents know that what they can do with their young children is very, very simple, but they're going to create memories and experiences that will last a lifetime.
Diane, thank you. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Leora, who joins us this morning in Oakland. Go ahead, Leora. You're on.
Hi.
You're on. You are on the air.
Great. Well, I'm also calling from Oakland, as you mentioned, and I noticed that there was a lot of calls from this area. I just moved here, actually, from San Francisco, and just coming across the bridge has made a difference for me because we have little gardens out here. A lot of my friends have gardens in their backyards, and I'm in my late 20s, and I don't have kids, but I noticed that families around here that do have children and have their children in the gardens with them seem to be realizing a lot of these goals that we've been talking about today in this conversation. And I wanted to emphasize also, I'm a graduate student and I study the oil industry and the consumers' role in that and decisions that are being made about where to drill, where not to drill. I think it's important to emphasize our roles as consumers. This also connects to the issue of health and just obesity issues that were mentioned earlier as well. So going out to nature can also mean going to a farm or, like I mentioned, bringing a farm into the community, into the backyard areas, growing, you know, maybe just a tomato plant or some corn or even some flowers. But that process is also very natural with bringing food consumption into the picture.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for the observation. Martin LeBlanc, is that something, is the Sierra Club trying to branch out into these other areas that people are discussing? We've talked about how all these issues to health are interconnected. Does the Sierra Club also see itself in the health business?
I mean, I think it does. I think that obviously, you know, the Sierra Club was started as an outings organization. I think sometimes people forget that, but we are an outings organization. And, you know, for example, our inner city outings program, you know, is matching up volunteers with young people. But, I mean, really promoting an active and healthy lifestyle is vital for us. And if you look at what the Sierra Club is doing, again, working with the Sheriff of Orange County and all these diverse groups, you know, ranging from the American Diabetes Association to the NAACP, we're really trying to work with a bunch of groups because this is a community-based approach. The only way that, you know, the Sierra Club can't solve this problem, no single group can. And I think the reason that Rich's message is getting through so well to folks is because he's kind of galvanized again this topic and brought together a lot of non-usual suspects. And, you know, one thing the Children and Nature Network is doing that Rich chairs, which I think is really critical, is they're bringing together leaders on this movement from around the country and really getting regional kind of forums going and discussing ways that communities can approach together the best ways to kind of solve this challenge, because this truly really is a challenge. And while I'm excited that the issue is picking up steam and people are you know, more concerned about it and wanting to know what to do next, I also leaves me knowing that there really is a challenge out there that needs to be met, because this is truly not, I think sometimes people look at, you know, global warming and all this, and those are critical issues that we need to capture right now. But at the same time, if we don't have a young generation that is engaged with the environment, how are they going to meet those challenges? And this is the Martin LeBlanc research study, but I would say 95% of the people that I ask, why do you care about nature? They come back to an experience they had as a child.
Yeah. In terms of working with others as we approach the end of our hour, you've done some interesting work, Richard Louv, to encourage diverse people getting together. You mentioned Clint Eastwood and the business developers. I also know you've had contact with the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, just as there is now an alliance between some evangelicals and others on the environmental movement. So is that part of the secret here, to make this something that isn't the cause of any one group, Richard Louv, but the cause of all?
Well, two things I didn't fully understand when I was writing Last Child in the Woods were that this is an intrinsically hopeful issue. That's counterintuitive, but people feel they can do something about this. We can do this. We may be overwhelmed by so many other things, but we can do this, and it has huge implications long into the future. The second thing that I learned was that this is an issue that brings people together. It didn't, you know, as I went out to begin to talk about the book some time ago, I realized that it didn't matter whether somebody was conservative or liberal or what their religion was. If they were old enough to have had this experience, they all wanted to tell me about the treehouse they had when they were kids or that special place they had in nature where they went, to which they still go because it still exists in their heart, and it gives them strength and calms them to go there. The real question that people are very bothered by is, will future generations of children grow up having that place to go to in their heart? That's a fundamental question about human development and about the environment itself. Everybody cares about this. That's one of the things that is astonishing to me. And this is what I would call a doorway issue. It gets people through the same doorway who don't agree on other things, maybe even to the same table. Once there, they begin to think about education in a different way. They begin to think about residential development in a different way. They begin to think about environmentalism in a different way, and so on. So it really is a way that opens doors rather than closes them.
And one of those open door experiences was the story that you started out with, Juan Martinez. We just have a few seconds left, but it said so much when you said what a difference it made to you when you went out and saw the stars for the first time. I guess I'd just like to have you give us a last word on why you think this is so important.
Well, I think one of the reasons why it's always become more attractive to me and why it's still such a passion working for the environment and all, it's because it's not just an environmentalist issue. It's not just, you know, a sustainability issue. It's, I think, a human issue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a human right to be able to, you know, see the stars.
Yeah.
It's really what brings us all together. I mean, I've had kids, you know, what broke down barriers. The city causes a barrier that, you know, you put up, but in the outdoors, we're all kids again.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have to leave it there. But thanks so much, all of us, all of you, for joining us and adding your perspectives on this topic. Juan Martinez, volunteer youth coordinator for the Sierra Club, was here, along with Martin LeBlanc, national student education director for the Sierra Club, and Richard Louvre, author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. Thanks all very much for being part of our program. Forum is produced by Robin Giannatasio-Mall, Kevin Guillory, and Christina Shaheen, with additional help this week from Noor DeWood and Cecilia Koth. Our engineer is Dave Freeman. Our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.